Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
When we think of harvest in Iowa, we think corn and beans. But there's much more out there. The wild foods of our prairies and woodlands. What's available? Why gather it? What's to be learned? And taste it. Let's go in depth with Jill Bebout with Blue Gate Farms, Columbia. Jill, so I understand that you gather a lot of wild plants throughout the year when they're available.
We do, not so much when the ground is frozen, but any other time of the year. We spend a lot of time outdoors, and some of the gathering we do is prairie or disturbed ground type wild harvesting, and then we also do a fair amount of timber harvesting.
So that's a difference in terms of like ecological environments that cause different plant growth?
Right. Most of the timber harvesting we do would be more shade-oriented plants that want to be in an understory or undergrowth, and the prairie plants tend to be more sun-loving plants.
Well, what's out there for us to harvest this time of year?
Right now, this year's a little bit different because we've been so dry. Traditionally, we could still get puffball mushrooms now, but because of the dryness, they're not very abundant this year. But we do have really nice regrowth coming on nettles, on dock. Dandelion or chicory has some nice regrowth on its leaves right now. Purslane is winding down. If you can find a protected area, it's a little frost sensitive. So if you can find a protected area, purslane is a great green to gather right now. Chickweed is coming back in abundance, but again, predominantly in protected areas. Amaranth is kind of winding down right now, but there's still a pretty good variety of greens, and then rose hips. This is really the time after first frost to gather rose hips as well.
Now, I know that there's a whole lot of listeners out there that are saying, what are those plants?
I've never even heard of them. Well, one of the jokes that we make about them is, depending on your perspective, a lot of those things are considered weeds. And if you'd look on the back of a number of our popular herbicide labels, you would see a number of these things listed. Some of the common names for them would be pigweed. Lamb's quarter is a common name. But a lot of these things are considered weeds, and it's things that people are either spraying or hand weeding out of their vegetable plots and flower gardens and field crops. But our theory around here is if you can't weed them, eat them. That said, one does have to be very careful about your identification. You really need to know what you're weeding before you eat it. But there's a lot of stuff out there that can be eaten.
And so a weed, by definition, is just something you don't want in this particular pot.
Absolutely. If it's growing in the wrong spot, then technically it's a weed. And not all of the things that we're talking about are natives either. Things like dandelion that we consider to be a native is actually an introduced species that came over with the colonists because they considered it an important food source. So they introduced it into the environment when they came, and now many times we consider them weeds, but with a little knowledge, they're also edible.
How do you eat a dandelion?
Dandelion is really a popular crop as far as eating because it's edible in different stages. The root of dandelion is edible as a vegetable. You dig the root out and peel it. And the leaves are edible as a green. And then the flower blossoms are also edible before they go to seed. So at their yellow stage, they're edible as well.
Well, we don't think about that, do we? We think of them as a weed in our yard.
Absolutely.
But you don't.
No, well, it depends on where they are. But often we will weed crops out of the vegetable gardens and then use them as a vegetable crop rather than disposing of them. So we'll do a wild mix that contains a lot of those things. So if you can make the chore of weeding into also a chore of harvesting, then it makes it a little easier on your perspective, I think.
But they have to taste good, right? Do these plants taste good?
Most of them do. Some of them, it's a matter of timing. So a crop like dandelion, you start harvesting early in the season, early in the spring, when they first put on their new flush of green leaves. But mid-season, when it gets hot, those leaves get bitter, and especially the large leaves get bitter. So you only want fresh, new, small growth if you're talking about the leaves. You don't eat on dandelions, say, the stem where the milky white sap is. General tendency is milky white sap type things, one, taste bad, and two, aren't really considered edible. Some of them are actually poisonous.
Okay, so a general rule of thumb to avoid the milky stem, like milkweed.
Right, avoid milky white things in general. Truly, avoid anything that you can't 100% positively identify. But milky white is a general rule to steer clear from.
A lot of us are thinking, well, dandelions only come in the summer, but they're really out there all year round, aren't they?
They are absolutely out there all year round, and more accessible sometimes than others. But really, with dandelion, early and late in the season is their prime time for eating.
And what do they taste like?
If you're familiar with some kind of European-type greens, maybe like an escarole or a frisée-type lettuce, it's got a little bit of a bitterness to it, always, even at young stage. But the roots are a bit tasteless. It's more a point of you can eat it, and it's nutritious, and it is filling, but it doesn't have a whole lot of taste to it.
So people probably aren't going to make a big investment in it, unless it's for the nutritional aspect.
That's right. And some of these are considered survival-type foods. You know, if you were starving, then this would be the thing that could, you know, pull you through that time period. And certainly with the colonists and later settlers, that was an issue for them. For us, it's more a matter of being able to appreciate and take advantage of what nature provides for us, as opposed to just considering it a noxious weed.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation about wild foods with Jill Bebout with Blue Gate Farms. What's the best tasting thing out there that we can find?
Well, berries would certainly be the top of my list. Wild strawberries, the raspberries, the blackberries, those things that are native, mulberries. It's hard to beat a good fresh berry in season. But as far as some of the green growth, early in the season, sourdock, which is in the rumex family, is very nice. It's very tart and lemony. It makes your mouth water.
Is that like an herb?
It's a leafy green, and it's one that you would easily recognize out in the countryside. It's very prolific, but that's really a nice one that you do in a mix of greens. You wouldn't necessarily eat just a big steaming plate of dock leaves, but you can. It's lovely added to soups. It adds really nice flavor. Wood sorrel has a similar flavor. That's one that a lot of us probably ate as kids. It looks like the little low-growing four-leaf green clover with little yellow flowers on it, and puts on a little spike-shaped seed pod, and the whole thing has that same kind of bright lemony flavor.
Okay, the little yellow flowers that grow, that you're right, we ate as kids.
Right, absolutely. We have a...
What's that called?
Wood sorrel is the common name for it. It's related to a very popular French green or herb called French sorrel or garden sorrel. Very similar flavor. The French just know how to appreciate it, and we mostly weed it out.
Okay, so, but it would take a lot of work to get very much of that.
It would take a lot of work. That's something that we add in as kind of an accent flavor. But again, if you were starving or you were lost in the woods for a period of time and really needed something to carry you through, it's also very nice because it makes your mouth water. So if you're thirsty, that's something that a lot of times in the garden we'll snack on just as we work, because it's a nice, refreshing flavor, and it's a fun experience.
Now, when I reach down and grab those yellow flowers and eat them, everybody looks at me like I'm strange.
I have no doubt that many people will hear this and have seen our wild mixes at market and think we are very strange. But again, part of it is simply appreciating and taking advantage of what nature's provided for us. And to some degree, it's the novelty of the thing, being able to just work your way through a patch of ground and graze as you go. You know, the deer haven't got it all wrong. They know which foods taste good. So it's an enjoyable experience.
So for most of us, it takes this sort of a transition from we're used to going to the grocery store. We can make the transition to garden, but it's hard to make that transition to wood and prairie, isn't it?
I think it's just a change of perspective. And again, you know, the number one most important thing here is the knowledge and the solid knowledge of what really is edible. And so first you need to have a knowledge of those plants. And some things like dandelions are very simple to identify, and it's pretty hard to get it wrong. But you also want to be very aware of where you're getting those things from. Don't just be eating them out of the ditches along the roads, or if you use chemical fertilizers and sprays on your yard, don't eat greens out of areas like that. But it's certainly not golf courses or, you know, a place like that. But if you have an area that you know has been unsprayed and you are confident in your identification, or you're with someone who is, that's really the best way to do it. It is a transition, and it's a learning of, to some degree, what our heritage was. This is how people started to eat, and just adding that as part of our palate. Obviously, it's not going to be 100% of our diet or any large percentage of our diet, and we hope it never has to be, but the knowledge of it it's a resource.
So it sounds to me like when we go out and we do this, we're going to get a botany lesson, a history lesson, a cooking lesson, lots of lessons in this. Philosophy, we're out in the woods, we're transforming ourselves in many ways to people that are a lot closer to the land than we tend to be.
Absolutely, and I think that's a great summary of why to have this information, why to do it. It's all those things wrapped together. It's important because it's part of our heritage, it's part of our natural world, it's part of our resources, and fewer people know this knowledge all the time. This used to be common knowledge to people in Iowa 100 years ago. People knew how to eat off the land, and I think it's important to keep that information alive.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about wild foods with Jill Bebout with Blue Gate Farms. What is available in the timber?
Right now, in a normal year, you could be looking for a number of mushrooms. The puffball mushrooms were coming kind of to the end of their season, depending on the freeze and frost occurrences. Hen of the woods is a popular mushroom that's out there right now, and those are two fairly easy to identify mushrooms. So some other things that are available right now are things like violets, the leaves of violets. The blooms are pretty well spent for the year, but violet leaf is out there right now. Lamb's quarter, the rumex plants, so the sour docks, things like that. Purslane in sheltered areas you can find. Chickweed is putting on a lot of nice regrowth right now. In some sheltered areas you might find amaranth, which around here is referred to as pigweed.
That's pretty common. How do you eat pigweed?
Pigweed, it's the leaf of the plant. So a lot of us see now in the grocery store amaranth as a flower. It's a very popular flower for people who are gluten intolerant. The amaranth plant is, pigweed is an amaranth. And so you could harvest it for the seed, which is what the flower is made of. But commonly it's just an edible green. It's a very nice one, tastes a little bit like spinach.
Okay, so how would you cook it up?
You'd cook it just like you would spinach, so you can eat it raw, and especially the smooth pigweed is a very nice raw green. Rough pigweed is a little less popular texture. And lamb's quarters, same thing. You can eat it raw. You can chop it up and add it to eggs, any of your cooked spinach recipes. They're very pleasant greens that way.
And you sell this at the Moy Market? What do you call it, a wild mix?
We call it our Wild Things mix. And we do two different variations for it. We started doing it on request of a customer who wanted to juice weeds but didn't have access to anything that was chemical-free in her area. So we started harvesting it for her. And that was a wide-ranging mix of everything from the greens we've been talking about to some of the edible flowers like violet or red clover blossoms we would add into her mix. Then we also did more of a cooking greens mix that didn't include the flowers as much. And the greens tended to be a little bit younger for a fresh green mix as opposed to a juicing mix. And those, as I said, are a lot of the greens that we just talked about. Purslane is a really popular green in that mix. It's kind of a juicy green, tastes a little lemony, a little bit like apples sometimes. And a lot of those mixes, people would just take the entire bag, chop it, saute it, some garlic and olive oil, and you could serve it as a side. You could add it to soups. We have one lady that would make ravioli, stuffed ravioli with it. And in the spring, there's a popular wild harvester soup called cream of weed soup, which would be like a cream of watercress or cream of spinach soup that's made predominantly with nettles, but you can make it with any of those wild greens. So they're fun ways to use them.
Nettles just sound bad.
And they do, don't they? Yeah, nettles is one of those that we never put in the raw salad mix because they do have to be cooked because of the toxin that causes that stinging reaction. But they're a very good green for you. And all of these greens are very highly nutritious, much more so than a lot of the things we consider normal eating greens. They're very high in nutrients and minerals and some of those trace nutrients that are hard to find in cultivated crops.
Well, it seems like the rolling hills of southern Iowa are perfect places to gather the wild plants.
They definitely are. Along those woodland edges, the prairie ground, and for a number of them in disturbed ground, so ground that's been cultivated and is regrowing in what we consider weeds, those are prime areas to look.
You have a lot of fun with this, don't you?
We do have a great amount of fun. It's fun to introduce this to new people. And on the farm, every year when we get our new harvest crew or farm crew for the summer, we have a big lesson. We go out, we do weed walks, we talk about the crops that we can harvest, how to harvest them. And it's a big educational process, but it is a great deal of fun.
Now, how does somebody learn more about collecting wild plants?
The best thing is if you know anyone that's knowledgeable about it. It's always best to learn that information firsthand because it's easy to mistake how you read a description in a book or how you identify a picture. So having that one-on-one experience is really the best way to do it. However, there are a lot of great resources out there on the internet, in books. There are wild harvesting manuals and field guides, like you'd find a field guide for identifying birds or trees. There are also wild edible field guides out there. And you can find a lot of information on the web as well.
Now, when did your family first settle in this part of the world?
They've been here a long time. We are the third generation to live on the ground that we're on now, and my family's been here since the mid-1800s, so they've been around a while.
Do you ever think that when you're out there gathering plants like this, you're doing the same thing that your great-great-great-great maybe grandma did?
Right. Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I really enjoy. When I was a kid, I remember my dad doing this, and I know that my grandmother always thought that my grandfather was a little goofy because first thing he'd do when the spring thaw came was he'd go out and he'd collect his spring greens, which were usually a dock, and his body just craved those greens in that early spring and wanted those nutrients. And so it's great to be able to kind of carry on that tradition.
Thanks to Jill Bebout for contributing to the program. For KNIA, KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In-Depth is available for podcast in the Radio Audio Media Player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In-Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In-Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.